Welcome back to Bibliosynensis.
Okay, hi Hauntiers. Welcome back.
Is this episode two?
This is episode two of season three.
Well then.
We've survived this long.
Wow. Okay, well, we're not alone.
Yeah, we've survived the tail end of the pandemic, hopefully, and now...
Well, we brought proof.
Season three.
Yes. Ah, okay. with us is Jonas and Lindsay from It's a Charming Life.
Yeah, our good friends in the Hauntier universe. How are you guys?
Good.
Doing good.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, I think this is our first Zoom podcast interview.
Yeah.
So crossing fingers, guys. So we're channeling you guys from Cobweb Cottage. I can see you guys just sitting in your little couch, kind of hanging out.
You're in Sleepy Hollow.
Sipping some tea.
Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing right now. What's the weather like? I mean, you guys are where? East Coast?
Yes, Sleepy Hollow.
The real Sleepy Hollow, New York, from The Legend by Washington Irving. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool.
It's a real place.
And it is summer now, so we have had warm days, but this week the weather has been very autumnal. It's been lovely, and here in Sleepy Hollow, we have to start early for pumpkin season and Halloween, so we're already getting started on all that.
Well, I bet, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm excited. And then Jonas, tell us a little bit about the reason why pumpkins are so significant.
They are very significant because, of course, the legend of Sleepy Hollow. And
for you?
And for me, it comes to a personal touch because I'm a pumpkin carver.
And yeah, professional pumpkin.
Yes.
I do big ones, like 100 pounds. And it's been fun. It's my sixth year, I think.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Time flies.
Well, that's awesome. So a little bit of a backstory, and we always talk about this in the interviews, Lindsay, but you guys are one of our influencers and you're part of the Hauntier universe, and you guys have several, Jonas has several illustrations with us, right? And Lindsay's the one that's been working hard with me on figuring out the blends. And what are we drinking today?
Yes, we're drinking our own lovely cozy cottage blend.
Right. And this one, I'm actually having it iced because it's warmer out here in LA, but you guys are having it hot right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's nice and chilly outside.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. We're having the same tea, but actually this one tastes a little different iced. I taste more of the sarsaparilla note in it, right?
And I'm really curious to try that because... You know, sarsaparilla is always sarsaparilla. Can never go wrong.
Yeah, it's like a root beer kind of nuance.
Actually,
with a raspberry.
Funny thing, if you drink a hot drink in hot weather and the drink is hotter than the weather, it should have a chilling effect.
Oh, I've heard of that. So, the rare occasions that we've been out with you guys, I know, Lindsay, we had pho.
Yes.
And I didn't know you guys were pho lovers like we were, but apparently it's a tradition in LA for some people to go get a bowl of pho right when summer hits.
Oh, how funny.
And it helps you detox all the gunk, because apparently the first heat that comes in is like the worst. And I always get migraines, so I'm curious to try that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good tradition.
Yeah. But that's how I know about it. But I haven't done it with tea. So I will have to test that out too. Yeah.
And one thing I'm going to try is to have my pho iced.
Oh.
What?
Wait, no, there's a Korean dish where it's an iced broth.
It exists?
It exists.
Oh, wow.
I haven't tried it though. I'll let you know. But I'll send the link or we'll do an update.
Please do.
Yeah.
Iced bone broth. That's crazy.
Apparently it's really good, and then they put like the pickles in it and stuff, so it's like iced noodles with pickles. I don't know.
And if you stick a stick in it and freeze it, you have a lollipop.
A lollipop broth.
Oh my gosh. Lollipop pho.
The possibilities are endless.
Exactly. Wow.
Good idea there.
You better write that down.
I should warn our audience, Eugene and Jonas do go on quite the tangents.
Yes.
I think they're so used to me and Lindsay kind of being the forefront of things that we're like super proper and scheduled and on time, but this will be interesting.
It's like the children that we are on a play date now.
Yeah.
With our moms.
Moderating. Moms sitting at the playground right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true.
If you guys could just see a visual of how casual and menacing their smiles are right
now. I
know. Well, we wanted to introduce you guys and also invite you as our guest this season because we're actually talking about visual books.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you guys are book lovers, but also you guys are working on a book with Jonas's illustrations. And a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of the illustrations on the Cozy Cottage, Sweater Weather, and the Chin Chin actually have some of your characters in them too, right?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of our little subtle test, actually, to see how people would respond to the look of the Cabo Cottage world that we're trying to create and the characters. And we were like, why not test it out on the T10s to see? And like, I mean, I don't know what you think, but I thought people really, really seemed to love the artwork and the world.
I feel very connected when I have this tea, more connected to this tea than other teas, just because of the characters.
Yeah.
So is it like the Flu Network? Or are we kind of just sipping on something that's going to transport you?
I don't know.
The world is
to Cobweb Cottage.
Maybe? I think it doesn't work for us because we are already here in Cobweb Cottage.
Yes.
But so eventually.
I guess I just need to close my eyes and
use your fairy godmother.
You would appear here.
I wish.
If you believe it.
Currently, Cozy Cottage is sold out. We actually got lots of feedback on the farmers markets. We've been doing a lot lately. But we are restocking tomorrow. So by the time this podcast is on, people can go get it.
Yes.
And the little gold bags will be back and you can definitely get a piece of Jonas's illustrations. But also if you want more of his illustration work, you can definitely get it at Woodland Library.
Yes, the Woodland Library. On Etsy.
And what kind of awesome things do you have out there? Because I know everything out there is book themed as well.
Yeah, mostly I have a lot of Sleepy Hollow prints. And we do have the Cozy Cottage label is also made into a postcard. And we have a handful of postcards there as well.
But you do them seasonally too. And you also write your poetry on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a fun part with the postcards that we always write a special poem, like a heartwarming poem that you, it always feels nice. It put a smile on me every time I receive a card like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't even know you were a poet until when I first asked you guys if you would hey, I'll send you tea if you can do a shout out. But you guys went above and beyond. You did this full YouTube video of you guys having tea in the garden and you had like a full background of your poetry over tea. And it was pretty fabulous, actually. I as a small creator at the time, I was like, what did I do to deserve this? It was incredible.
Oh, well, we're so excited to work with you too.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you guys since have just, tea and books, man, really. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to bring up was your Sleepy Hollow book club.
Mm-hmm.
So how's that going? Tell us a little bit about your book club.
Our book club. Yes.
That sounds really
it started
fancy. Our book club.
Our book club. It's kind of a crazy story how it all started, right? On the brink of when the pandemic was beginning. And because the legend of Sleepy Hollow was going to be celebrating its 200th anniversary on March of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a friend here in Sleepy Hollow that owns a restaurant, Horse Feathers, and it's actually in Tarrytown. But she was wanting, we kind of got the idea together to start the book club, but we were more originally trying to do it in person. Mm-hmm. So we had planned, because the restaurant is very like dark academia vibes inside. So we're like, what better place to meet and talk about books and, you know, have a little Sleepy Hollow book club. But then when lockdowns happened in New York, I remember texting her a few days before we were supposed to launch, and we're like, what should we do? Like, what's going to happen? And so we decided, you know what, let's take it virtual, because we really wanted to celebrate the bicentennial of the legend. And we had no idea, you know, that that was just going to all continue virtual for the rest of the year. And so the book club just kind of got to play a little role in helping celebrate Washington Irving's bicentennial for the rest of the year. And we got to do some cool stuff with the Sleepy Hollow Historical Society in October. And yeah, but besides that, so that was kind of like the beginning of it all. We started out by reading the legend together and having some fun facts and all that. But then we've started doing different books here and there. And then this year we kind of wanted to change it up a little bit, and we started doing different themes by season. Mm-hmm. So last year was kind of like individual books, but as people started going back to work and whatnot, we realized people kind of didn't have as much time to read, and neither did we. So we were like, let's just pick a theme. So for example, in winter we did classic mysteries. So just, you know, everyone just pick what they want to read, and let's just talk about it once a month on our live streams that we do on YouTube, our little tea time live streams. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that was just kind of our way to like where everybody can just kind of go at their own pace, and we all just kind of check in with each other once a month and chat about books. So it's been really nice.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
I can explain a little bit about the restaurant, Horse Feathers.
Oh, it, yeah,
it's the perfect book club meetup, yeah. Because they have it feels like coming home to an old author's kind of living room or something. Mm-hmm. They decorate with books, and they have a big mural with all the classic authors, mm-hmm. like Washington Irving, which mm-hmm. is
Mark Twain,
and
a bunch of guys up there.
Yeah. And I don't see a woman, though.
That's the thing. The owner, I know, she was like, we need
authors. Some women there, too.
Authors in New York.
Emily Dickinson.
Was she in New York?
I don't know about New York. I just
it doesn't have to be New York. They're from all over.
What's it called? C.S. Lewis's lover is from New York. What was her name?
Oh, yeah.
I forgot.
Oh, where is Luke?
I don't know all that stuff.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah, but yeah. I remember reading her biography, and she started in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Eugene's looking.
Oh,
it up.
Yeah. I'm looking.
Can you mention any book titles she wrote?
I know they were mostly essays. That's the problem.
I know that Hamilton's wife actually wrote his whole memoir.
Oh, yeah. In New York.
Yeah.
Oh. Does anyone, if anyone's listening to this, if you know any female authors?
Oh my God, what? Jodi Picoult? She's from New York.
Oh, Jodi Picoult's in New York.
What the fudge?
Hmm.
I guess it makes sense.
Does she count as the classic wall, though?
No, she does not count. If she counts, then, you know, like Twilight counts.
Well, no bashing on Stephanie Myers.
Okay, she's a good
She's
authoress.
Got her own. She's got her own thing going.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I will judge.
Well, we'll figure it out.
We will. My God, are you serious? We don't have classic female authoresses.
What year is the mark?
I am so upset. Like, New York is literally nothing but like readers. What? You can't tell me this. No.
No. It looks like it. Well, we'll have to be on the pursuit. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's continue.
Oh, Joanne Didion. Oh, wait, but she's recent. Oh,
okay, stop.
Okay, bye. I'm done. I'm losing it right now.
Okay, well, the theme this episode is actually about illustration books. And I just figured it would be a good time to talk to you, Jonas. Tell us a little bit about maybe you getting into being an illustrator. I know that you're by trade originally a graphic designer.
Yes.
And I believe illustration runs in your family, right? I think at one point you showed me someone's work and he was doing like chocolate labels or designs or...
Yeah, that's my twin brother.
Oh, see? Okay. Yeah.
I also can go back in time to like my grandmother. I found like, I mean, they were all artsy, but not necessarily working with it, you know.
Okay.
But I found this big folder with drawings and stuff that I never had seen. Like, I had no idea she used.
Is it similar to what you do, or was it a different sort of art?
I mean, it wasn't any portfolio or anything like that, but it was, it looked more like kind of school work, kind of like that kind style.
Okay.
Just like the traditional, like perspective and, you know, fur, animals, all that stuff.
Nice. Okay.
So, and I would say that my family are very artistic in many different ways, because I have an older brother, a photographer. And what it comes down to is that we all have this eye for beautiful things. I would say, yeah.
And that's why you got Lindsay from across the world.
Exactly. I had to search the whole world for her.
Aww. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish I could say that. Like, pshaw, Europe. I need an American girl.
That's exactly what I said. I was very posh. Back in Sweden.
Yeah.
You know. I need something more exotic.
Oh, I will cheer to that.
Lindsay, can I have a cheer?
Oh. Oh man. Okay. So what made you decide after seeing that? You were like, you know what? I'm going to be an artist.
Yeah.
I must say that as a kid, I never thought you could really work as an artist or make money of it. I thought it was just a fun thing you do after school and like, and you draw to not be bored during the lessons and all that stuff. I can find all my actually I did so many characters in school, like on lessons. I could show my brother after the lesson that this is what I got from the lesson, a new character. And it could be like a math or anything.
Mm.
But I just love to fill the every corner and every page with drawings of different stuff. And it made you popular. I feel like it was some kind of poison that I could give out to my classmate to like me.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Good job.
I mean, it's a good icebreaker. If you're new in a class, I realized show them that you can draw and they will like you. It sounds very pathetic, I realize, hearing myself, but it's the truth.
No, it's very
true. Yeah, that people,
yeah, I mean,
were curious about.
Yeah, I feel like you seeing someone draw is fun. I mean, we all grew up with that, the artist whose name I forgot.
Who are we talking about?
The big...
are you talking about Dr. Seuss and the Cat in the Hat?
Yeah, yeah, all those things, yeah.
Sorry, exactly. Your gestures, I feel like we're playing charades here.
I mean, that guy with the happy accidents.
Mm. Oh, Bob Ross.
Bob Ross.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say Bob Hope.
Yeah, not Bob.
I mean, he's a good comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, being this child who liked to draw, I grew up and ended up in exploring music instead. because I, as I said, I didn't know you could live on art. So,
I'd love to hear more about this because a lot of people don't know this about you.
Oh, really?
And I think this has a lot to do with your romance too.
Yeah.
And how you guys met. Obviously,
it's have a big connection there.
Yeah. So tell us about this music venture.
Well, I feel like if you can't draw, the closest thing you can do that is still artistic is to play music. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why I didn't ended up being like a truck driver or anything. I just went to music. I thought that would be my big breakthrough.
Okay.
I was so naive back then, but it was fun.
Well,
I don't regret it.
For those of you that don't know, you were in a band, is what you're alluding to.
Yes.
And what kind of music did you play?
Oh, we played, the darkest thing you can imagine.
Which is beautiful.
Black metal. Scandinavian
black metal. Yeah.
And then, Lindsay, you were into that sort of music, too, at the time, which, by the way, I'm still jealous of your scene hair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had some pretty epic hair at the time.
Yeah.
I was kind of coming out of my punk rock phase into my metal awakening and realizing that was my real, soul music. And then, I already listened to Jonas's band before I knew him, actually. So that's pretty crazy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then we met kind of through, long story short, through a mutual friend when I was traveling in Europe. And she was like, oh, you remind me of these guys I went to school with that had really long hair and played this dark music. It looks like the shirts that you're wearing. And I was like, oh, okay. And then turned out, it was his band. So.
And then the rest is just a fairy tale, right?
Definitely.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
But that's perfect because that talks about how the subject now is illustration is so significant to us learning as humans.
Yes.
I don't think this article does justice, but I actually found this really awesome nonprofit and I'll share the screen with you guys. So the way it works around here is normally we do an article and we react to it.
Okay.
Mm.
But we couldn't really find anything on illustrators. They just wanted to tell us like the top illustrators of the day. And I just didn't think that was appropriate because how do you show visual on a podcast?
Yeah.
But I found this really awesome nonprofit. I'm going to keep saying that. It's called The Power of Pictures. And the nonprofit is CLPE, which I'm trying to figure out what it stands for.
Let it be a mystery.
But they're in the UK, and what they do is they mainly talk about how kids need narratives and art and drawing and role play in order to learn and have a healthy relationship with learning.
Mm-hmm.
But right here, this article is talking about engaging in art and illustration teaching approach.
Mm.
And so they have some interesting points. Like here it says illustrating characters alongside an illustrator or enabling adults gives children a starting point into the process of how to bring characters to life.
Mm.
I mean, how do you feel about that as an illustrator, Jonas?
I love that concept.
Like, does that go through your mind when you're creating characters? Do you feel like it's a process in a way that you're going to develop the character as you draw them? Or, I mean, what's your creative process?
I mean, I am self-taught. I never went to any school or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I had doubted myself a massive amount of times. It's because you realize that every kind of the step-by-step parts of the creating the final piece, you have to go through like the ugly stages too.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't see any like real artist that you look up to, have to doing the same thing, you think that you lost the drawing or it's unsavable. But then you see an experienced artist step by step and realize that, okay, it doesn't mean it's like over. It's just the ugly part of before you finalize it. Because what you do when you look for reference material online of art, you only see the finished product that is beautiful, and you don't see like the rough parts of it. And so I think it's really healthy and good to see someone alongside with you. Yeah. And like see that, this looks horrible at this point, but it's just a rough sketch, and that's normal. I'm not bad. You know, you realize that kind of stuff. It's just how you have to do it. Like, look at a building before it's done. It should look like a skeleton. So,
can you imagine if we judged every building based on like the first 2x4 that goes in?
Yeah,
exactly.
The Walt Disney Concert Hall would just be like horrible.
A stick.
Yeah, yeah. We're like, stop right there. We don't want any more.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I guess we could have a conversation about this, but I don't brag about it a lot because many people know me as the T Hauntier and T Spectral, and my work for over a decade in the tea industry. But all that was inspired because I actually did go to school to be a graphic designer. And I actually was part of the National Illustrations Guild for Children Illustration. And I can tell you right now, Jonas, that everything that you're concluding is literally what they teach us in school.
Oh, really? Okay, so if you're listening and heard me, you don't have to go to school. I approve you. The highest grade. You can use this reference.
It's just, I never really thought about that because your self-doubt is something that I went through a lot as well. I mean, I originally went into school for communications. And at the time, I mean, I'm probably dating myself by this, but most colleges told me that graphic design as a major didn't even exist.
Oh my goodness.
Not really.
So that's why I had to take my degree online for some of the time. And I had to hop from college to college. Just because people back then didn't teach graphic design.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, there was one point where I was going to get accepted into a college, and it was a very reputable college. But they literally told me, yes, you're going to get a graphic design degree, but you're only going to learn graphic design on your last year of school. So you're not even going to touch a computer.
Wow.
Okay.
Or design a brand until like your last year, which I thought was ridiculous. I left. But yeah.
Maybe they hadn't invented the right programs yet, but they thought that maybe when she do her last year, maybe we have, you know,
Well, back then I think Photoshop and all that was new and it was very useful, but I don't think they realized that it would quite take over the way it did. Which I'm very grateful for, because at the same time I got to learn a little bit more of traditional medium, I'm sure, more than what most kids are learning now. Oh my god, I said kids, young adults. Them kids. Yeah, so it's really fascinating, and I think that's something that really draws me and resonates with me with you, Jonas, because you use traditional mediums yourself, right?
I do, yeah. As you say, I feel maybe it's healthy to go the traditional way before you go into the graphic design, you know, path. Because, you know, you learn how to, usually in the traditional way, you only have one shot to make it right. and you have to do every step right. If you have a tablet and do things in Photoshop, you can just, you know, go undo, you know, there is no undo in traditional art, depending on the medium, I would say.
So that's an interesting thing you brought up. Just you got a tablet and you got this one shot. It just reminds me of, again, I'm going to date myself. Back in the day, we only had, if you were really lucky, DeviantArt.
Oh, yeah.
But how has your medium on YouTube, your Instagram following, and just everything affected your art and the way you share your art and how people respond to it?
I would say it has had a big impact, I would say, especially showing it live and showing what you're working on, like finished pieces you have. Just people like to see the artist holding it up and talk about it, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. And show and tell time.
And I heard someone said it so brilliantly that if you sell knives and go door to door, you don't show them an image of a knife. You show the real knife you sell, so they can like see all the angles of it and maybe see like the structure, like the canvasy.
I was expecting a really dark joke right there. So
really,
it's okay. I'm just quiet.
What kind of joke did you expect, if I might ask?
I don't know. It involved door to door and knives, so
I see where it's going.
You said it this time, not me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and here's another thing I wanted to ask you, Lindsay, because you're the one that started strictly, I wouldn't say strictly, but mainly as the vintage figure in your relationship.
Mm,
yeah. And I distinctly remember being, I'm still a fan, but I just remember even before we were talking, your little vlogs.
Yeah.
And I just remember you getting all excited. I distinctly remember you got excited. You were like, Jonas finally thought to try dressing vintage and it was amazing.
Oh my goodness, I forgot about that
vlog. but it's changed significantly, especially even the way you guys live at your cottage. It's very antique style.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of your art and such are influenced by estate sales, but even your postcard art is influenced by sheet music covers. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's my,
so,
well, I used to play piano growing up, and then my great grandma, like, she had a bunch of sheet music and I used to love looking through it. And then I always was attracted to antiques and vintage, and the covers are truly like pieces of art. It actually happened just the other day when we were at estate sale, and not often do they have sheet music, but this one did. And I went to pick up a few, and I mean, I know how to get a good deal, and the guy was asking more than I wanted to pay for the sheet music, but hey, he actually knew the value. So he was like, oh, well, that's worth the price just for the artwork. And I thought, and in my head I was like, he's right, but I'm not gonna pay that because I've gotten it for cheaper other places. Mm-hmm. With people who don't appreciate the artwork, because it's kind of like my little hidden secret of like how I get inspiration is from vintage postcards and sheet music, because they just have like the most charming little illustrations, like especially the ones with a little scene of like a cozy house and, you know, over a little hill, and there's like, you kind of just like wonder, the song is some cute little title, like A Cozy Home for Two, or, you know, it's, and you just want to imagine like who's living in there. And I think, yeah, I kind of brought my inspiration to Jonas when it came to building our Cobweb Cottage world. And it's been so cool to see like kind of the mix of, you know, his Scandinavian fairy tale style mixed with like the vintage, you know, inspired stuff. It's a really cool mix that I think is kind of unique.
Very unique. I remember when we were discussing the design for Chin Chin, because we just released Sweater Weather. And honestly, I didn't know how you were going to top that.
Yeah.
I mean, even you, Lindsay, you're like, this is honestly probably my favorite piece of work you've ever done. And I was like, well, that's a tall order. I don't know how this is going to work. So I think we went down the route of, I told you, please add as much Swedish influence as you like.
Yeah, with the winter scene.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Very nice. I mean, that's a challenge that I really didn't know either how to go, what direction. And I guess also it's easy to be home blind. Like, things you grow up with is not as special to me as it is for Lindsay. That's why she's a good, what the words I'm looking for here.
Well, I can see the charming things from your culture that maybe you're just kind of used to.
Yeah.
Like the little...
And she can appreciate it in another way. And when she do that, I see it in another way and appreciate it more.
And you put
it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, and you put your own style to it, and then it's really magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it really difficult to design the Cozy Cottage logo after doing those two designs, or
first you were like, oh,
yeah. It was,
when you paint a house, like a little cottage like ours many times, what you were always telling me before he starts a painting is, I don't know what other angle to paint this tiny little cottage, but somehow you always come up with something really wonderful.
Yeah, maybe we should mention that the label on the tea is a cottage, but from
cottage that
slightly different angles.
Different angles, different seasons.
And different seasons, yeah. So yeah, it is, how many angles can you do? 1, 2, 3.
Well, you thought you had run out, but then...
6 angles? So we are on number 4, right? No, 3, sorry.
Well, you did 3 tea labels.
You have a new one in your postcard, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think...
So for the Cozy Cottage label, yeah, it was a little challenging because you had already done the 2 different angles.
Plus that I used another medium for that one.
That's right. You know what actually helped us break through one time was the vintage sheet music or a vintage postcard. I can't remember, but I remember I was like looking at different things for inspiration whenever we get kind of stuck. And I found a scene where it was like, because the sweater weather cover art was like pretty up close to the cottage, you know, what you'd kind of expect.
I kind of think of your YouTube when you do your buntings or anytime you record, that's sweater weather. Right there.
Yeah, that scene right there, right in front.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, for Chin Chin, we were like, okay. And I found, I think it was a vintage Christmas card where the angle was like as if you had just backed up from the cottage up a hill, and so you're kind of looking down at the little cottage in like the winter scene. And I showed Jonas that, and I was like, would this be something like that you could work with? And I think that was when we realized, okay, yeah. Different perspectives. You can just kind of like step back, and then for Cozy Cottage, you kind of step to the other side, for example. So
I mean, doing like the next illustration in the perspective of an elf,
an elf. Or the gnomes. That
The Chin Chin.
Yeah, because then our newest postcard was from the angle of up in a tree.
Nice to be here more now during the pandemic, that you see what's going on more around the house. So that helped me to get more inspiration for the example you said, Lindsay. The newest postcard is from up from a tree, and you can see the house from another angle.
And because you have the little robin's
nest and all that stuff.
And the deer.
And
the graveyard.
I mean, before when we were more stuck in more day jobs, we never really saw what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we only came here to sleep and eat maybe in the morning. But now living here and we actually experienced, there's the robins are moving in there in that tree. And then you get like those ideas delivered to you.
we've started filling up notebooks full of notes about what we call our cobweb critters. Just the little things that they do all day and trying to find names for them. And yeah, so we definitely have like, we'll make up little story scenarios to each other. Just like we'll have tea outside and watch the animals and just like get lots of ideas and try to give them personalities. Oh. And it's really fun. And then yeah. we'll, but it's gotten so far as to like, sometimes we think that we're turning into the illustrations.
Oh no.
Because
the worlds are colliding.
Yes, and we're like, we don't know fact from reality anymore.
Yeah. If you see a squirrel, we try to talk to it like, hello.
We do.
And then you can't do that in public. You know, they think it's weird.
That's so funny.
You're an American. We talk to dogs all the time.
It's all right.
Yeah.
So you've painted stuff that happened. Like you've painted something or a sketch and then it would happen in real life here.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or vice versa. You would like something would happen here and then you would paint it. And I'm starting to lose track of which came first.
I know.
You know, it's fun.
Who came first, the egg or the hen?
No, that's true. Art imitates life totally.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
No, I feel you. Okay, so this is a fun story. So I'm currently working on publishing Nocturnal Notes, the novel, which was our play back in 2007. And it was kind of like a noir LA fairy tale, like an urban fairy tale version of the Camelot story with Guinevere and Lancelot.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty interesting. And it kind of had like this weird occult following because it was fringe theater. So we thought, I was finally like, you know what, I'm gonna just turn it into a novel and like call it a day. Because during the recession, you're out of school, you're jobless, you don't know what to do to calm yourself down.
Yeah, definitely.
So me and Eugene started a blog and we started writing letters as the characters back and forth because it was called Nocturnal Notes. And we kind of did
that's so cool.
But in the story, I gave Art's character, which is based loosely off of Eugene, a dog, and I named him Ink. And I was like, you're going to get this black dog, and it's a black lab, and it's just going to follow you everywhere, and it's going to be like Ink, like shadow. It's your inspiration. And we adopted Bella before the pandemic.
Black dog.
And what happened? It's like his mini-me follows him everywhere. In fact, I think she's in the room right now.
No.
I threw her out.
So you're saying that you have powers?
Yes.
Yeah, but isn't that just weird how that happens? It's like deja vu for writing.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
And why is that? Like,
maybe it's just manifesting. What do you think?
But is it because you are... imagine it and
or
then
you want
to look for it
strongly, maybe.
Sorry?
Yeah.
Maybe you want it so
maybe
strongly.
You just want it so strongly that it
no,
happens.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She said it too.
Oh, okay, Jinx.
So next time you should write Eugene a big pile of money.
Yes.
Because
yes,
he
please do that.
Okay.
But they should burn in his hands if he doesn't give them away to people.
And then I will.
How cruel.
And I'll make sure that the robins fly in and send you guys gold nuggets.
Ooh, yeah. poop nuggets. Bird poop.
Yeah, and then no.
But it's gold.
They send you trust fund slips under the
rug. Yeah. There you go. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's actually
it is it really?
Yes, that's like how you get bad poetry.
What? Okay, explain this.
Okay, there's this Viking legend where Odin actually got this mead. I think there were like trolls or something. They just had like a huge pot of it, and this pot would allow you to actually recite poetry and sing songs. And all the gods were so like jealous of it. So Odin transformed himself into a bird, drank the whole thing. And when he flew off, you know, he started pooping some of the mead off. And That's how you get bad poetry.
And I do see all the Vikings.
Crap poetry.
If you cook the mead, I see a ton of Viking children standing with their open mouth to the sky.
Yes.
You know, right? Oh, those were the days.
God.
Those were the days.
Lindsay, it's begun.
Bad poetry. We should do a Renga someday.
It sounds very familiar because I'm pretty sure I read that in some kind of history book I had about the event you talked about.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think was it like a duel or something between the giants?
It was the giants. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what happened, but...
No, they were all very vague, to be honest.
Yeah.
A lot of Viking stories are very vague. So, we could revel in it later. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
Oh, you're good. Shall I go back to this...
article?
I don't think it's really helping. I think we're having a great time. It says giving children time to illustrate their own characters as part of their idea development focuses the attention on them, and understanding how they look, what they say, how they behave when first creating a character.
Huh.
So it allows them to experiment and try different forms of media.
Can I ask you, Stephanie, do you remember your first character ever that you designed?
Ooh, that's cringy. Do you remember yours? I'll share mine if you share yours.
I mean, I try to. It requires a little bit of thinking, I think, because I try to think. I was so young when I
we all block it, man. It's okay.
Okay. So,
it must have been really bad.
I'm okay. My first one was Daffy Duck.
Okay.
But
what is like original character?
Yeah, like your own.
My original character?
Uh-huh.
My first original character was Cross.
Oh, Cross. Okay.
Basically, I was a huge fan of this anime called Fatal Fury. And I was enamored by the style that I went ahead and created. You know, I mimicked it.
Mm.
And it had a lot of details. It was crazy. Like, you know, it would demand that the eyelashes would actually have an extra line to actually show, like, whether it's a guy or a girl. The nose would be pronounced because Fatal Fury is so much about Europe.
Why don't I show them a screen cap while you're talking?
So oh, yeah,
continue.
Please.
Yeah, please.
And it would actually make a lot of the facial features very, like, jagged. It was ironic because the characters are supposed to be American. You know? Terry Bogard and Andy Bogard, you know, doing martial arts and, like, all these, like, crazy anime, like, super moves everywhere. And the ears, for some reason, the ears and the neck were so detailed, like you would actually see the veins on the neck, you would see the earlobes actually like pop out a bit. So here,
yeah,
I'll share the screen.
Do Andy Bogard.
Excited. This is fun.
Okay
so this one,
is
the artwork that he was really inspired growing up.
Well, yeah, okay. I see.
Yeah.
And then what a lot of people don't know, so let's backtrack a little. So first of all, interesting fact, Eugene is actually colorblind.
Yes.
Really?
Judge me, I dare.
So this kind of cell shading and the like extreme levels of it, it's like the fact that it's more pronounced is like easier on the eye.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then secondly, Eugene was actually in school as an animator.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The original job I wanted was an animator director.
Okay.
And that's actually...
That's interesting. That's
why Eugene and I got together, was because I wanted to be a storyboard artist.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Here's another good example.
Yeah.
The dramatic.
Yeah, I can. The line work is very appealing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, for some reason, he always exaggerated the ears.
Hmm.
Like, he always paid, you know, close attention to like which character had a certain earlobe.
Hmm. Okay. Oh, yeah.
I never noticed that.
Yeah. Is that like a thumbprint of the? Do every people have different ear?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that just my weird other, like my weird idea I got right now?
I'm glad that we're not recording.
Okay. Basically, it's actually a big deal in Asia.
Oh, it's true. They do have different earlobes.
Yeah. It's a big deal in Asia because if you have big ears, it would actually mean that you were a descendant of a royal family. Mm. It would also mean that you would live long.
Oh.
Yeah, because basically royalty in Asia would wear like these really big earrings.
Mm.
And the earrings would actually droop their ears.
Oh, okay.
So is that like when people stretch their ears, what is it called?
Yeah, the gauges.
Yeah, the gauges. Yeah,
okay. But isn't that fake to do it like that?
Huh?
Then you can fake it. Like, if I want to look fancy and rich, I would just stretch my ear.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's okay with them?
Well, traditionally. Okay. I'm not saying that's how it is now. Now they just get plastic surgery.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I was just, the whole ear thing was a huge deal, especially during, the 80s and 90s, Asia had this thing about Buddhism actually being a big deal. And you've seen Buddhist statues, right?
With the long earlobes.
Yeah,
long
I feel like Mickey Mouse would do good there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It'd be great. But he's big ears.
Yeah.
Okay. But tell us about Cross.
Okay. Cross basically had just pronounced features. And the thing is, Asia had this thing about, I guess, Anglophilia, that we just were, curious over, white culture. And so I wanted to actually emanate that, being that I grew up with American classmates. And
okay.
Character, I couldn't really see myself as him, but I could see him as the friend I've always grown up with.
Mm.
You know? So it was kind of weird because I would always portray him with this weird arrogant air that he actually knows better all the time.
You're an annoying friend.
I've had friends like that. Why would you want that? Because that's literally my friends every day.
You just attract those.
I don't know. Okay, when I moved to America, my friends would correct my English.
Oh, okay. I could see that.
You know, and it was awkward because in Asia, they do teach you English. It's just, it would be British English.
Mm. Oh, yeah. So you had the British accent.
No, we didn't have the British accent. We were terrible at that part.
Okay.
Filipino English is very
muddled.
It's muddled. It's almost got the same tartness as German, but... when you hear a German speak English, that very sharp tone.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
But at the same time, it's they use very proper words. It's very formal.
Mm. Yeah, it is. And the thing is, when I came here to America, I didn't realize American English was so poetic. You know, they come to you and say, "So what's up? You know, here's a down low." Or...
so poetic.
You know, I don't know, words like frick-a-frack and and I'm like, are you serious?
What is this?
What are you saying? You know? The most recent one I actually saw, it was kind of cute. I was at work.
Uh-huh.
The guy came from China and Taiwan, and he was trying to understand this certain question. And they were like, "So do you live with your family?" And he's like, "Yes, they're alive."
Oh, yeah.
It hit me. They're like, oh no, this is not going to translate well.
Yeah.
Like, do you live with your family? And he's like, I don't understand what you're asking. I think I've answered the question.
Oh, yeah.
So
I feel like it. I've been in that situation too. I just feel it. Like,
I think I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did it end?
It ended badly.
No.
No. Well, it led to one thing to another because, like, you know, they would ask, like, so how did you get to America? And they're like, well, my family gave me $20,000. And they're like, wait, are you going to pay them back? Like, and then he had this culture shock. Like, why would you pay them back? Like, in his head, it's like, that's disrespectful. That was a gift.
Yeah. Mm.
Interesting.
It just was a huge cultural transition that
did
not end well.
Okay.
Hmm.
Okay, but wow. Jonas, are you going to share your first character?
I mean, I feel that would be a stick figure because I couldn't really draw much back then. But or actually, I think I painted myself into a corner here. Did you see what I did there? Painted, you know.
Oh, oh.
I see. I wish I came up with that quote, like how you say, paint expression, painted into a corner. I wish I would get a lot of royalties. Anyway, I tried to think here. I used to draw my classmates. I remember, like, my twin brother is also like into art like me. And I remember that we draw our classmates, like we did them funny. Especially if it was an annoying classmate.
Oh no.
We came home and were angry and frustrated. Like, man, that classmate punched me. I'm going to draw an ugly picture of this guy. And that's what sweetest revenge. But they would never see it though. It would just be for my personal.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no.
Kind of
like
vendetta. You know, you'll see me like in the future having this big archive of my previous classmates, and I'm gonna put it out there in a gallery.
That's like my favorite picture. One of my favorite pieces by Andy Warhol. Was he did a graduating piece from his college, and it was supposed to be like a reflection of all the skills he learned. And he literally took a Xerox copy or like a photocopy, just plain piece of paper, took a pencil and did line art of him picking his nose.
Oh my God.
Oh, really?
Turned it in and he failed college.
Uh-huh.
He didn't pass because, you know, it was his dissertation. But yeah, it was pretty entertaining to go to his like huge exhibit, anniversary exhibit. And that's the first thing they have framed. Don't stand too close to it, you know.
But that's also very, very hopeful and encouraging that you, even if you fail education, it doesn't mean it's over.
Yeah,
it's very true.
It's so true.
Mm-hmm. And to answer your question about my character, I feel like I never really draw much people until like the last 10 years,
but maybe. Okay. More like a troll kind of character.
Like troll. I did a lot of trolls, and I think that's where I came from, the world of trolls, I would say.
That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
I know that when I was a kid, being in the Philippines, they actually would train us to draw animals and plants.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, we have an early
That's
start.
An actual class?
Yeah, zoology and biology.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, we would have to actually learn how to draw a feather. We would learn how to draw a beak. And the thing was, the school had ducks. So
did you have ducks just to draw them? Because that sounds like a dream.
Well, yeah, and my mom actually made me bring bunnies, which I thought they were my bunnies, and I actually held that against her till now.
Let the world know that needs bunnies.
They were lop-eared bunnies.
I love the fact that you draw those things instead of a person, you know, because I would say that it's not super encouraging to only draw like a nose, learn to draw a nose.
Yeah.
And I feel at least that you get, I would get stuck in all the rules. And I mean, I know it's important to know this stuff. But the first thing I thought, like a beak, that all the beaks are the same, but by studying them, like you did, probably gave you a perspective that there's thousands of different beaks.
Yes.
And just that knowledge is worth a lot.
I know the trickiest ones to draw are duck bills.
Yeah?
Yeah, because duck bills are curved. So when you do a 1.5 or a 3/4 osis look, you always have to draw the back side of the duck bill.
And yeah. Then
do another line above and then make it, you know, look like it was seamless, that, oh, there seems to be a mouth underneath the duck bill.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I don't know. It felt like I actually gained experience in life just trying to draw a duck bill.
Yeah.
Kind of silly. I know. If you've ever tried to draw like Daffy Duck or any duck character, like try it. It's actually kind of fun.
Yeah, I know that because I was into Donald Duck a lot. Dude.
Oh, Donald's huge.
He's like the. Aww. I know Mickey Mouse is America's star, but Donald Duck is the kind of Scandinavian star.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh. I was always fascinated about his beak, and you know, as a kid, you try to draw it, but it looked kind of, you know, flat and like pointy.
Yeah.
And
With the comic DuckTales comic books in Swedish, yeah. So lots of Scrooge McDuck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the hardest part was to, if you learn to draw it, you learned the iconic angle of him from this side or whatever, slightly from the side.
Yeah.
But then to translate it, to use it in all the angles was super hard. So that's why I'm actually happy. It made me happy to hear that they taught you beaks.
Yeah, we wouldn't have passed otherwise.
Oh, no.
And the thing is, Asia's education is German. We take the style. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so
well, there you go.
Literally, if you didn't pass, you would be demoted to, like, Class B or Class C or Class D. And you never left your own classroom. It was
okay.
Teachers that would leave.
Oh.
So you would literally grow up with the same classmates in the same room and act like the teacher just walked into your house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because we were responsible to clean it.
Yeah.
Anyways, before I finish this method of teaching kids with illustration and narrative and
yes,
that process, what are some, like, what do you look for when illustrating, I guess, for both of you? I mean, what illustrations grab you in a book? What do they do? I mean, do you have favorite illustrations in certain books? Is there something that just like wowed you over and you're like, wow, I love this book, and the story is so much more incredible.
Do you have your answer ready?
I do. Well, it's actually not a book, though. My inspiration has always come also, besides the sheet music, from vintage Disney concept art, especially from Snow White and like Pinocchio, Bambi, like all the ones from the 30s and 40s. The concept art is just so amazing. And actually one of the artists is Swedish, so it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Gustav Tengren, who was an admirer of John Bauer, which you were probably going to say that that's your favorite.
I was going to say that.
So it's kind of a fun connection there. So you can talk about John Bauer then.
Yeah. I must say that the reason I started with like watercolors was because of Jan Bauer, a Swedish artist. He lived in the late 1800s. But his whole family drowned in a steamboat accident. I think it was around the 1920s sometime. Mm. I might be wrong. I
think so.
Anyway.
So he was pretty young.
Yeah, he was pretty young in his 30s. And it's just a tragic story because I would have loved to see his later works.
Don't you wish you could have seen his style develop?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, his style is the iconic, like, Swedish fairy tale. You know, any kind of trolls.
It's actually a very dark style of his artwork. Because when you think of cute trolls, you're thinking maybe of like Frozen, those stone rock trolls.
Yeah.
Pretty cute. But his trolls are like you see the trees are like the deepest part of the forests. He illustrated with the right color tone, not as wide color tone, just the, you know, the four color tones you find in the depths of the forest. It's like dark, like
mossy green.
I would say that kids today would probably not handle it. but they are at the same time very like friendly, friendly and lovable.
Yeah. And there's like the princess that he draws that I forget the story, but that's with the troll. So she's like kind of glowing in the darkness compared to all of the the trolls around her. And
is there a way I can look that up?
Yeah. Type in John Bauer.
I have a book here, but I know the listeners can't see, but you can see the name of it spelled.
Yeah.
J-O-H-N-B-A-U-R.
Sure.
Okay. So let me go to images. I think it's cool that we're doing this on Zoom and we can share like art inspirations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
must say also that. There we go.
Yeah, you see the glowing girl.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that beautiful?
Oh my
gosh. It's very, very like simple in colors, but at the same time, it has all the colors.
Yeah, it's almost sepia toned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the first time I saw this, his art in a museum, I expected these big, huge paintings because I never enjoyed painting big. And I felt so bad because everyone was talking about that you should paint big, you know, like huge, the bigger the better. But to see his art, they were like... some are not bigger than 10 by 10.
Yeah, they're so small.
And that was really a boost for me to feel like maybe I am on the right path. Yeah. You know, I don't have to go big if I don't want to.
Oh, look at this one.
So it's pretty. Cool. Oh, and look at John Bauer next to
the portrait.
Oh, there he is.
Don't you think he kind of looks like Jonas?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's crazy. If you put a ponytail.
Jonas. How vintage you have to look now.
You should recreate this.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Recreate this photo.
Just tuck your ponytail to the side.
And you know what? You've got the trees for it too.
Yeah. You need a little pipe and you're good.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we've been to the town like outside of the lake where him and his family drowned. Mm-hmm. And they have a little statues and museum there.
Aww.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And I mean, it's like you can see books on eBay here for quite a lot, like old books, first editions with his art.
Oh,
so they have even reached here, but I don't think the common person know about John Bauer. But the funny story to connect him with Snow White was that Gustav Tengren that you mentioned, the concept artist for Snow White and Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
John Bauer was considered to do
Snow White,
either Snow White or Bambi, I think.
Oh, that's right.
Wow.
So he was like on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Eugene's.
You got a Disney book.
Oh, yeah.
We've got, it's, what is this? The Art of Disney.
So yes. Oh, like, wow. That's
fully archived. And
this one is Christopher Finch, though.
Oh.
But
it was a gift. It literally went nowhere.
Does it have everything? Or it looks really heavy.
Yeah.
Like a Bible.
It looks like art. It's as big as a tombstone.
Yeah.
Forget the gym.
Reading is the gym.
Art books
for the brain.
Oh my gosh. I've been wanting to actually bring staff to the Tashan bookstore. I was just down in Beverly Hills.
Oh.
You know, it's like those big fancy table books that you actually find.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the high end types, and usually they all weigh like that. So,
oh wow, okay.
They're also famous for their little pocket books that you can tear and turn into postcards.
Yes,
like classic art stuff you find in museums, like at the gift shop.
Oh, cool!
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because since you brought up artists that don't do large portraits, it was originally started by, I think it was a German artist, comic book artist.
Mm-hmm.
It was just literally his passion. And then his interest just kind of peaked when it came down to understanding art. And it just kind of reflects that it takes an artist to actually understand what real art is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I felt like the reason why the whole issue about graphic design not being an educated degree back in the day was because there weren't too many graphic designers.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time you actually graduated with all these graphic designers, phenomenon. Like, really?
Yeah.
And now when Jonas, you know, when people see that he does traditional art, it's like, oh, you do?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's real. I mean, graphic design is real too, but
I'd have to add
physical like that.
What's the artist's name? I forget. Aaron Blaze. I think I pronounce it right. Aaron Blaze.
Is it Eric?
No, Aaron.
Aaron? Okay, sorry.
Aaron Blaze. He worked on Aladdin, Lion King and all that. Animator. And I actually right now take his lessons for digital art because I feel like I want to at least have a little taste of it, and I want to learn from an artist with experience. So I'm not saying that to scare anyone off, but I just want to have the big palette, like traditional, and see what the digital fuss is about.
That's what really woke me up, to be honest, when deciding what field I wanted to be in. I was still in high school, and of course, I was an anime nerd. But I fell in love with, it was at the time, it was sort of like a renaissance where people were kind of playing with Photoshop, digital, but also kind of playing with traditional mediums. And at the time, this brand, I don't know, I'm sure you guys are familiar with it. It's a marker brand called Copic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So Copic just kind of got released here in the US.
At the time,
and its spokesman was one of my favorite artists for anime. His name's Yukiri Sugisaki.
Okay.
And he hybrids, like, he was kind of the guy that really pushed digital art, but to make it look traditional. He mixed a lot of, like, traditional marker work, but he did a demo at the Art Center, and I lost my mind. I was kind of in love ever since then, but let me see if I can share the screen on that too. But yeah, I love his work. In fact, I have a vintage poster of his in the shed.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
So he mixes traditional medium with digital. That's a mixed medium.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah, but his stuff is almost like fantasy. Like, look, this is his digital work versus his more traditional, like, this is marker work right here.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I just loved the way his stuff moves. I mean, he deals a lot with, like, This plot right here is about a famous art thief that steals like famous art pieces, and he's like, apparently his accomplice is a black phoenix.
Hmm.
So demons, angels, art pieces, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And he must know his colors very good, because
yes.
My eye, it feels very
soothing,
relaxing, right? And soothing to look at.
Look at that. It's just,
and that's amazing.
Yeah, well, the
explain
way.
Explain what you're looking at.
So this one is from an anime that came here to America. It's called Pilot Candidate. But it's actually about like young kids learning to become like perfect. And that's always the theme, is they have to constantly become perfect, whether it's physically or mentally. So they kind of like go through self-doubt and what they feel. So this piece, they're playing with negative space, and the white space kind of represents calm.
Mm-hmm.
And then it translates with the blankets over the two main characters to kind of symbolize like a little bit of respite and like, I guess union.
Mm-hmm.
In understanding, yeah, that struggle. But he does really beautiful representations like that.
Okay, and for anyone that's actually listening, for Pilot Candidate, don't watch the anime. It's horrible.
Yeah, just read the book.
just read the manga.
No, I feel like I have to watch it.
No, don't watch it. You're going to ruin your life. It's like, it's so slow, and it doesn't even get to the point until you finish the season. Just read one chapter of the manga, you'll be satisfied.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But his artwork is so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Another person that did that is, I'll look it up later, but it's the artist who did Fushigi Yugi. She was also another, what they call,
Watase?
Yeah, she's a renaissance, what they call a renaissance manga drawer.
Mm-hmm.
Art. Let's see if I can find some of her hybrid art in here. Oh, it's a he. Okay.
I think it's a he, because I saw a guy when I actually went to the panel.
Oh, yeah, it's a guy. There he is.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for some of his hybrid art, because he did similar work. Oh, here's a good one. Yeah, but it's that, you can see it right here. It's literally that hybrid of digital and traditional.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you look up Lion King? Oh, is this sketches?
Sketches.
Because I kind of want to bring up Jonas's thing about, you know, transcending between animations. And I just want to let you know, Jonas, the first thing they ever tell you when you get into animation school or, you know, try to be an animator, is Disney will never accept you unless you actually do animals.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, all of these illustrations that you're seeing right here, it's literally, like, what you kind of have to give Disney.
Like this
sort of... I can see that, because the challenge is to give their faces, make their faces again, come alive in kind of human expressions. Am I right?
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I really don't blame you for actually showing intrigue in that style, especially if you're a traditional artist, because when I was in college, which is what just kind of discouraged me, you know, bad enough that an animator's lifestyle is to sleep under your desk because you don't get paid unless you actually finish a project.
Oh, yeah.
You had to learn both 2D and 3D animation. And at the time, Disney fired 200 employees that refused that standard.
Okay.
So it was a big, big, horrible, like, experience to kind of, like, be an animator. But kudos to everybody that stuck to it.
Yeah.
Like the best of the best now.
Yeah.
But in trying to actually get into new media, Disney demands that you know traditional art styles.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, their backgrounds, they used to actually be painted.
Yeah. Didn't they paint it on, like, glass?
Mm-hmm.
I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sells.
Everything was hand-drawn.
Yeah.
Hand-painted.
That's so, so interesting
frame by frame.
To watch also, like, what's that on Disney Plus that we watched?
Frozen?
No, the documentary about the parks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Imagineering?
Yes.
Yeah.
You see, like, how they do all the kind of art, even on the parks, like decor and all that. It all goes back to knowing the traditional skill.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. It was intriguing because I was trying to learn, I guess, the different styles that each studio had as a standard.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. It was kind of cute because, like, they kind of taught us how to draw Hanna-Barbera.
Okay.
And I thought...
I think you need to explain Hanna-Barbera. A lot of people don't know what that is anymore.
Looney Tunes.
Really old cartoons.
Flintstones,
studio.
Was it?
Flintstones.
And Yogi the Bear.
Jetsons.
Yeah.
If you know any of these, you know, I'm sorry. I don't really have other references, but those.
Well, they were later bought by Warner, so that's why people know that. So.
But they must have been a comic strip to begin with.
Yeah.
They must have been, because, like, the style that they were actually drawn in were always in squares.
Yeah.
To actually draw Fred Flintstone's head, you had to draw a square. And the same thing, okay, ironically, same thing with Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Draw Winnie the Pooh's head without drawing a square or a cube. It's never a circle. Never.
Mm-hmm.
If you start with a circle, you've already failed.
I'll have to look
at it. Yeah.
You'll lose the eyebrows. You'll lose the snout.
You're right.
That's
very
it.
Cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And I must say it also, like, working with pumpkins, carving, the studio I work for is, they always get like this, you know, a couple of Disney characters, a couple of, 1 year it was Peanuts. So people thought that, they are just cartoons. They are like
the easy ones.
I want a real rendering kind of
like
a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fact is that people were struggling the most ever
to do Snoopy.
Yeah, there was Snoopy. Like, seriously. Because if you do one tiny eye, like slightly different, it's all ruined. It doesn't look like him.
Wow.
It's true.
It just looks like wrong.
Yeah, it looked really wrong.
It just looked tweaked out and not.
Yeah.
So funny. And to do characters on a 3D or like a round object like that, to do a face, you know, I don't know how the carvers do it, to be honest.
Well,
so I'm like, how do you take a flat photo or somebody's face, you know, like a character, and put it on a round pumpkin and it doesn't look distorted, you know? That's very interesting.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I want to hear more about Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, okay. What do you want to know?
You said you studied it. How did it go? Like, how did you grasp it?
It was not hard, actually. It was literally like a 15-minute lesson.
So oh, yeah?
What is the secret they taught you of Hanna-Barbera?
To draw squares.
Always draw squares.
Always draw squares.
Yeah, that was literally the challenge. Just draw a square. You get Fred Flintstone's head. No problem.
So it's a stack of squares. I guess that makes sense because it was mod design back then.
Yeah.
But everything needed to look semi-futuristic and sharp. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, because literally, okay, you draw the square, right?
Yeah.
The peak of the square, the right angle square, is where their eyebrow is supposed to be.
Okay.
That's their eyebrow. So you go right ahead and create a curvature, and there you have the cheek. And then go right ahead and just start, basically, it feels like you're carving it, to be honest.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, now I'm curious. I have to go back, but I don't think I've ever seen a perfect circle shape of any sort in any Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
No, never.
Like, even the wheels are square.
Mm-hmm. Are you right?
Oh my goodness, yes. I never thought of that.
Like, have you ever noticed the difference between Disney characters and Hanna-Barbera? Like, you always wonder, like, how is it that Disney can make it look so realistic?
It's like, the plush pillow versus the foam pillow.
Exactly.
don't even the cars in Hanna-Barbera
they
go like a little bit jumpy, like
how
it would be if you had those kind of wheels.
That's
fascinating.
So it is realistic in that way. I give them credit for that.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. It was actually a lesson in perspective. Obviously, you start with a horizon and then start, like, you know, placing everything from the dot. But that's like the odd thing about it was, like, how do you make all that 3D effect into 2D? And that was literally it. It was like you had to simplify it. It felt like we were trying to become beatniks looking at it. Like, it's so conceptual. Well, that's true.
It's very futuristic, like I was saying, futuristic mod design.
Yeah, space age.
Okay. So I'm going to finish this article and we're going to close. Because I know we're chatterboxes and our time zones are different and I think they need to go to bed.
Okay, fine.
So then the last thing they bring up is visualization, and asking children to picture or visualize their ideas is a powerful way to encourage them to move into a functional or a fictional world. Children can be asked to picture the scene in their mind's eyes, walk around in their imaginations, and finally they bring it to life by recreating it in drawings, painting, or other mediums.
Do they mean like mood boards, kind of?
Yeah, like sitting with an illustrator allows them to learn these skills of character development, for writing, or exploring different mediums, and in turn it's just teaching them the levels of what makes a good story.
Yeah
It's fascinating.
I think it's really good. Like, I get inspired to hear this. I mean, to see the process behind those finished characters, that it's a long way. You can like explore and like have fun along the way. And if you have one idea that doesn't have to be perfect, but maybe one detail from it can be what ends up in the finished product.
Yeah. So, Jonas, I know you've done paint with me, where people have seen details of you behind the scenes finishing a painting, but have you ever thought of doing the sketching process?
Well, you know, that would be, I feel like I would like to do it.
I'm curious why you're giggling.
I know, sorry. I'm the one who really gets the behind the scenes. And
I had to do like major voiceover if I would do that.
I get to hear all the frustration and I'm not good enough and all those kinds of things. And I have
to be honest, like every piece I made, it has a journey that can be like mentally compared to like taking the ring to
Mordor.
And
is that mentally challenging? You know,
the last piece before it the tide is turning is like when Gollum bites his finger off. That's the pain, like the blood pouring out, and then I fall down and then wake up in a light environment when the piece is finished. And I don't even remember, how did I do this? You know,
that's exactly what
I feel. It's appropriate that you're near a graveyard doing these things.
So. I know.
Yep.
I've been tempted sometimes to just bury my stuff. But that would be weird if not somebody see me.
Somebody finds it maybe down the line and they're like, look at this incredible artwork. Why was it?
I know. Well,
you know, it's also, you know, I don't want to take trash in the nature.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. But
I know, I've been like, oh, you should live stream while you're doing art. People would think it's, or especially pumpkin carving, you know.
I would say like Bob Ross, he's an example of calm along the whole process. And I feel that most of the artists are not like him.
Well, yes. You know his story, right?
I forget.
I know he had like anger.
He was a drill sergeant and he realized how horrible he was. So he redeemed himself by doing his art.
Okay.
That's amazing.
In fact, his nickname in the army was Break 'em Bobby.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He's a gentle spirit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I guess that's his secret, is he had to get it all out at an early time.
But I think that many people think that about artists, that that is what they have going on the whole day long, every day.
Oh my gosh.
But then, you know, if you refer to him in the midst of all this drama, the trip to Mordor, you kind of feel bad about yourself that,
Do you have is it like a hot mess process, or is it like, because I know Eugene hates being around when I paint, because I will literally, like, my whole arms and my clothes, I mean, actually, you can see it on my shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Like, covered in paint. When I go through the process, there's just music blaring, and I'm in the zone, and everything gets messy. And he stays away as far as possible. But
the splash zone.
Is it kind of just this hot tornado mess of sketching, and then you put
it out? I'm not that messy. Maybe because we have so many antique furnitures.
I'm like, and, no.
I think I learned to. I don't know what sizes you paint in, but since I'm painting in kind of small sizes, I feel like it's not that big splash zone.
Mm.
I have that piece in here, but I don't want to.
Don't bring everything.
I have one here. This is, watercolors are more tame for me, but
yeah,
because I can keep them contained. But I usually do large canvases.
Oh yeah.
I don't know this.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But I can totally see, like, the influence.
The influence, right? I just love showing the skeleton work. Like, you can see the layers of sketch and stuff.
It all sounds like my writing process, to be honest.
So your writing process is a hot mess.
Well, you see me write. Like, I could finish an entire chapter, but then just because out of dissatisfaction, I'd throw it out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I am a patron's nightmare.
Oh no, I've seen him. Okay, so that's another secret. I've taken his characters and wrote them into a novel because he'll throw it away.
Oh my god!
Oh really?
You're like, yeah. No,
so I preserve his characters by writing them into our stories.
But that's great. You have, like, it's like you know, when you throw out stuff. They are good characters, but maybe you're not happy with the writing, but you feel sorry for the characters. So you, what I see is, like, you kind of have like an employment agency that you take them in.
I've grown up with his characters even when we were still friends. So now when I write them, they really feel like just old friends.
Oh, so sweet.
They have a special family.
Oh,
yeah.
I know it sounds super sappy, but I who's gonna adopt these possessed demon people and mafia?
Yeah,
nobody. Yeah. Show them, give them a little tea, and
I mean that's basically my curse. I can actually finish a book, but you'll never see it. I'll probably throw it in the dump. Yeah,
But you are like Back to the Future. His dad.
Oh
yeah.
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
You have to go, like, you have to travel back in time and go to yourself, putting the earphones on him, on yourself while you're asleep, and play Van Halen on very loud volume and say that you are an extraterrestrial from planet Vulcan.
That's actually how I get different characters, to be honest. I would have to take an album of some music I don't regularly listen to.
Oh, yeah.
Like, one was Linkin Park.
I
swear I am not a Linkin Park fan, but I had to listen to the whole album so that the character would not sound like me.
You know,
I can't rage like that. I rage a different way, but I don't rage like that.
You don't do the Linkin Park way.
Yeah, I don't cry. okay.
Yeah.
Oh, shots like, fired.
You know, I will smash a person's face. That's my rage. You know, I have to feel that person's body. You know, like that's why I used to actually, you know, fight back when, like, you know,
when fighting was legal in the Philippines. Yes.
Well, it's not legal. But,
yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways,
so
I would probably more scratch. I would go for the eyes. Yeah, okay. Scratch the eyes.
I picture you with like mega powers. Do you do a mean growl, by the way?
No, I cannot growl.
You don't growl? Does your twin brother growl?
I did. I can growl. I mean, in the car when I'm alone. And
okay.
Like, I was never a singer, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're a shower growler.
Yes, you might say that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Oh my
goodness. Okay, so on that note, is there anything we get to look forward to in the universe of It's a Charming Life and the Woodland Library coming up?
Coming up,
yeah.
We have.
I mean, I know we have a collab next month, right, with the Cottagecore Takeover.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we'll send more details that way later. But anyways.
I would say that since fall are coming towards us, you would see a lot of fall content. And because that's our favorite holiday. And
I'm surprised this whole time we haven't talked about your original character, the little pumpkin boy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, how could we forget?
So you'll probably be seeing more of him.
Yeah.
This fall, a lot of Sleepy Hollow stuff, obviously. Headless Horseman. What else? Lots of cozy cottage stuff. Mm-hmm. Our usual. Yeah. No, we're excited. We have some fun stuff.
Can we please talk about that?
Pompidou.
Kind of a cult sensation, that's all.
Okay, what does it look like? No one's actually seen this character through our video, our podcast.
Well, okay, so I like to picture him as, imagine if this cute little pumpkin balloon got lost.
Oh.
And he's just this like fluffy balloon clown looking character, but he has a pumpkin head.
Okay.
And I don't know, that's the way I describe him. But isn't like the plot that he's the Headless Horseman's son?
Yeah, I mean,
you kind of toyed around with different.
Okay. That was more maybe a version of it.
But we like to imagine that just like Cobweb Cottage kind of lives in that Sleepy Hollow countryside world, that there's like this other side of that. Well, I'm speaking for you, but kind of like a more magical side of Sleepy Hollow, like for legends and ghosts and little pumpkin boys that come to life and kind of like over the garden wall. Mm-hmm. You know, but
I would say that over the garden wall. I don't know if you are familiar with that, but maybe some of you who listens know over the garden wall.
Okay.
Imagine that kind of atmosphere and just like whimsical and kind of cozy, spooky, kind of a mix there.
Yeah, but he has, you know, he's a very sweet little pumpkin.
Actually,
boy.
I've been like kind of sketching like some kind of plot idea tons of times, and they are all different. Some are more futuristic than others. So I feel like where I'm right now with him, I know how he looks, but the setting can be anything, and I guess that is an exciting note to leave Pompidou with.
Yeah. So everybody look forward to Pompidou.
Yeah, it's gonna be something. I can almost guarantee that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe he'll appear in the T Spectral universe again. I know we have
definitely.
Yeah, we had them in a few trading cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were, oh my God, those sets were so lovely.
Yeah.
But yeah, stay tuned and thank you guys for chatting with us.
No, thank you for having us.
Yeah.
It feels like we did our usual casual chats.
I know.
Way, but we curated it this time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I even forgot it was the podcast.
Oh, well, that's a good thing. I mean, yeah. It's all about being cozy. And
did I say something stupid?
We can cut it out if you want.
Okay.
Oops.
We did a lot of dumb things on the show too, so don't feel so bad.
You keep it, whatever you want. Yeah.
Okay. But let's cheer. Again, this is Cozy Cottage we're drinking, which is the blend that was curated by Lindsay and Jonas to based off of their cottage. It's a charming life and to future illustrations.
Cheers to that.
Yes, cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah.
And we'll see you all next time.